In the latest in a long line of news out by the state of New Jersey late this afternoon, Governor Chris Christie signs a controversial gas tax hike into law. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Gas will now be taxed at 37 cents per gallon in the Garden State, up from 14 cents. And as WHYY's Joe Hernandez reports, the extra money will help fund transportation projects for around 8 years.
The gas tax hike is part of a plan to fix what's called the Transportation Trust Fund. That's the pot of money that pays for road and bridge repairs across the state, as well as mass transit projects. And over the summer, it went broke. Christie is now allowing stalled transportation projects to start work again. But that hasn't stopped critics from slamming the 23-cent gas tax hike. Opponents say the low tax was what made filling up in New Jersey so practical. And that's important for a state with so many drivers who spend a lot of time commuting. The tax hike, however, comes with several tax cuts. For one, the sales tax is dropping a bit below 7%. And the estate tax, which is levied on valuable inheritances, will be phased out entirely over a few years. Christie, a Republican, worked out the deal with Democratic leaders in the state legislature in September. He says the plan will raise $2 billion for the state's roads, bridges, and mass transit. From the New Jersey desk, I'm Joe Hernandez, WHYY News.
Energy is becoming a big issue in this year's race for U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania, one of the most closely watched and expensive contests in the country. The race between incumbent Republican Pat Toomey and Democratic challenger Katie McGinty could decide which party controls the U.S. Senate. And as State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports, it's also become the site of a national battle between fossil fuel interests and environmental advocates.
Millions of dollars are pouring into the state from both big oil and big green. On the Republican side, oil and gas money is backing Pat Toomey. And on the Democratic side, environmental groups are backing Katie McGinty. And if you watch television, you're getting bombarded with attack ads like this.
The rest of us. That's why Toomey voted to give big oil polluters $24 billion in tax breaks. No wonder big oil polluters have given Toomey $700,000 in contributions. Pat Toomey's
the ad, by the way, is paid for by the environmental group League of Conservation Voters, which, along with groups like Next Gen Climate Action, Environmental Defense Action Fund, and Environment America, has poured nearly $4 million into an effort to elect Democrat Katie McGinty. That $700,000 referred to in the ad are oil and gas industry contributions to Republican Pat Toomey, as calculated by OpenSecrets.org, which tracks campaign funds reported to the Federal Election Commission. Open Secrets also reports that a super PAC associated with a conservative, oil-rich Koch brothers has spent $7.2 million to help elect Toomey. As for oil and gas-funded attacks against McGinty, there's plenty of those as well. This ad is paid for by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which has spent about $5.6 million to elect Toomey.
What, energy?
Yes. Have you seen how Katie McGinty tries to tax energy? Proposed $72 billion in BTU taxes under Clinton, as much as $1.8 billion in taxes on Pennsylvania energy. She even supported cap and trade.
That ad refers to McGinty's support for a carbon tax when she worked for Bill Clinton's administration. Carbon taxes are aimed at reducing greenhouse gas emissions. When it comes to the nation's future on energy production, environmental protection, and climate change, a lot rides on which party controls the U.S. Senate. So even if these are not the top issues for Pennsylvania voters, you can bet they are for the fossil fuel industry fighting new environmental regulations, as well as environmentalists racing to put a halt to a warming planet. For large national environmental groups, backing McGinty is a no-brainer. She was a protege of Al Gore. She served as Pennsylvania's Environmental Protection Secretary, and she is committed to fighting climate change. Toomey, on the other hand, is a big supporter of continuing coal production as well as oil and gas. He's critical of McGinty's support for Obama's Clean Power Plan, an effort to make electric power plants cleaner, which Republican Senator Pat Toomey says is an attack on the coal industry. Here's Toomey speaking to the Pennsylvania Press Club last month.
The EPA is determined to end the coal industry. Hillary Clinton is a cheerleader for that. So is Katie McGinty. By the way, natural gas is next.
But it seems unlikely McGinty will go after natural gas. She doesn't support a fracking ban. Instead, she says it should be regulated. And McGinty served on the board of NRG, an energy company with natural gas interests. McGinty did promote renewable energy development under former Governor Ed Rendell. She told the Pennsylvania Press Club back in August that she's not against coal, but she spent most of her time talking about incentives for solar and wind.
I would lead the charge to make sure we have those incentives in place and we can get back to those good manufacturing jobs, those good clean energy jobs that we were proud to have when I was serving as Secretary of Environmental Protection.
The money that oil and gas interests are spending for Pat Toomey far outweighs the environmental dollars spent on Katie McGinty. But between now and Election Day, a national proxy war over energy and environment will continue to be waged here in the Pennsylvania Senate race. Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
In Pennsylvania, 85% of students who enter ninth grade graduate high school in 4 years. In Philadelphia, that number falls to 65%. And at Frankfurt High in the Northeast, just 59% of freshmen who walk through the doors in a given September graduate 4 years later. It's a sobering statistic, and one that the school hopes to fix with the help of a new initiative, as WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Aaron explains.
Today was a banner day for the freshman class at Frankfurt High School. A day of speeches and oversized checks and enthusiastic chants.
Class of 2020? Class of 2020?
This group will be unlike any class in Frankfurt's long history. Thanks to a $500,000 grant from AT&T, they'll be participating in a program called Diplomas Now. Working in a couple dozen middle and high schools across the country, Diplomas Now focuses on 6th and 9th graders. It uses attendance and discipline statistics to find students at risk of eventually dropping out. It then bombards those students with personalized attention to keep them on the path to graduation.
If you make sure they come, they get their work done, and they pass their classes, they will graduate.
Johns Hopkins researcher Robert Balfans co-founded Diplomas Now. He knows most schools can't afford a team of trackers and prodders to make sure kids show up and do their work. What he hopes is that his program spurs people to rethink how we structure the high school experience, especially the experience in high-poverty schools, where students face tons of challenges outside the building.
That's what we have to do in these schools. If we have high needs, we need additional supports. And our goal is to try to show that should be normal.
It is, however, still a novelty at Frankfurt, the kind that requires all sorts of pomp and circumstance. The hope is the students will hear that same tune 4 years from now. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
The Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts in Center City, Philadelphia, will open a temporary building in the Chestnut Hill neighborhood this weekend. There, visitors can purchase art and take drop-in classes. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Crimmins reports that the retail experiment is an attempt to expand PAFA's mission.
When the Academy's new retail manager, Mary Lynn Mack, was hired just a month ago, her boss told her about a concept for a pop-up shop. It would be a little storefront along Germantown Avenue in Chestnut Hill, just for the holiday season, to sell gifts and art.
In my mind, I thought it would be, you know, something very small and creative and feature some of the student art. So when I walked into this 3,500-square-foot space, I was delighted.
The space is three times larger than expected, thanks to a generous trustee who happens to be in the real estate business. The extra space will allow PAFA to give the people of Chestnut Hill a taste of what it has been doing in Center City for two centuries. Teach art classes, give lectures, and display art. If they like it, they might visit the main campus downtown. PAFA Vice President James Gaddy says what had started as an idea to simply capitalize on the holiday season expanded into rethinking how the nation's oldest art school attracts future patrons and students.
You know, I think that's a larger question, right? What is the future of museums? How do museums sustain themselves? We have the luxury of being one of the country's few remaining art schools and museums. So we're not only displaying art, we're also, you know, teaching the next generation of artists, and we're really impacting that future of American art in particular.
One of Gaddy's immediate concerns is how to win the support of his retail neighbors on Germantown Avenue. He says everybody likes PAFA's two-hour drop-in art classes for children. It will allow parents to leave their kids behind while they shop up and down the avenue. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
This evening's forecast, cloudy skies and then clearing overnight, falling back to 42 degrees. Sunny tomorrow, Saturday's high 68, and then Sunday mostly sunny, high 73 degrees. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. 3.5 weeks out from Election Day, most Americans are unified in a shared lack of pride in the presidential candidates. Let's get into it with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Frank, is that lack of pride predicated on the issues and the stances the candidates take, or their character and temperament?
Well, it's an interesting question. We, this week, were in the field Monday and Tuesday night after the debate to try to get a feel on where the candidates were at this point. And your pride issue is an important one. We asked separately about Hillary Clinton and about Donald Trump. Would you be proud to see Clinton as president, proud to see Trump? And she wins, but only 46% of Americans say they would be proud to see Clinton as president, 32% Trump. So although she has the edge on that measure, neither of them breaks through the 50% threshold on that. And that goes along with the data that we've talked about before, showing both of these candidates have very high unfavorables among the American public overall.
Is that apt to change in the remaining time?
Well, we haven't seen a lot of change. And I should point out that Hillary Clinton was seen as the winner of the debate Sunday night. Legitimate scientific polls, I should point out again, including ours at Gallup and others, so when you give Americans a choice, show that she won not by quite the same margin as she won the first debate at Hofstra, but she clearly won the debate. We're not seeing a lot of change. However, this is important, Dave. When we looked at the data by party on the images of the two candidates, the days that came after the revelations of the video on Friday and after the debate and so forth, we saw that Trump was taking a significant hit among Republicans, not among independents or Democrats, but he clearly was dropping among Republicans in terms of their favorable image of Donald Trump, whereas Clinton actually had shored up her image some among Democrats. So the change we are seeing now, this is not a great shock given everything we're reading and seeing about the intra-party fighting in the Republican Party, is that their own nominee, Donald Trump, now only has a favorable image among about 6 out of 10 Republicans.
And given that, although Gallup is no longer in the presidential prognostication business at this juncture, can we make some assumptions about who the winner might likely be?
Yes, we're at a point where we can look back in history, and everybody who studies it says that if a candidate is ahead at this point, generally speaking, or almost always, they go on to win. So we would have to say, given that among the horse race polling that is available to us at this point, since Hillary Clinton is ahead in almost all polls that I've seen, I think the probabilities are high that she would go on to win. And so it probably will take a major, or would take a major upheaval in this race for Clinton not to be the victor at this point.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight. Finally this evening, Philadelphia's regional rail lines may be running on time again after months of delays, but city buses and subways could be stalled. Members of Transport Workers Union Local 234, which represents bus, subway, and trolley drivers, will vote Sunday on whether to authorize a strike. If approved, a work stoppage could take effect November 1st, one day after the union's current contract expires. It means drivers could be on strike during the November 8th presidential election. The last time SEPTA went on strike was on Election Day 2009, and that strike lasted 6 days. That's all for tonight's show. Newsworks Tonight is produced by Shai Vinyakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the controls this week, Adam Stanishevsky. Sandra Clark is vice president of News and Civic Dialogue. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for Newsworks Tonight.